It's Tuesday, September 20th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, a suspect in the New York blast is caught after a shootout. World leaders gather in New York with Syria high on the agenda.
It's just a question of both sides trying to see where the weaknesses exist.
In Syria, another ceasefire agreement is fraying. The story of one Syrian family making a new life in the United States. And it's time for the Senior Olympics. It's all on today's International Edition. A man sought by police in connection with bombings in New York and New Jersey on Saturday is in custody following what has been described as a shootout with police. Law enforcement officials said Ahmed Rahami was 28 and detained in Linden, New Jersey, late Monday. Two police officers and Rahami sustained non-life-threatening injuries in that shootout. Police were searching for anyone linked to four explosives-related incidents in 3 days, including a blast late Saturday that injured 29 people in Manhattan's Chelsea neighborhood. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio said Rahami is the sole person believed to be involved in the New Jersey and New York explosions. And as local officials have publicly debated for 2 days how to label the bombings, de Blasio described the blasts as an act of terror.
Based on the information we have now, we have every reason to believe this was an act of terror. We will be going into some detail, and there is still a long investigation ahead. But now we have, as I said, every reason to believe this was an act of terror.
Bill Sweeney, FBI Assistant Director in charge of New York, says early evidence suggests that Rahami acted alone.
I have no indication that there is a cell operating in the area or in the city. The investigation is ongoing, so as we develop more information, we continue to go, but I have no indication that there is a cell operating here.
Commissioner James O'Neill, the New York Police Department, says there were several reasons for authorities making an arrest so quickly.
A lot of technology involved in this, but a lot of good old-fashioned police work, too. I mean, between the FBI and the NYPD, the members of the Joint Terrorism Task Force, this is a pretty quick turnaround. And this happened 50 hours ago, and we have our suspect in custody. So I think it's a tremendous job by all involved. I think the alert system is very, very helpful to the police department and the FBI in this and in other instances also. It gets everybody involved. It's that sense of shared responsibility. And there's 36,000 of us, number of FBI agents, but if we can get everybody in the city engaged in helping us keep us safe, I think this is the way to go. This is the future.
VOA's Ramon Taylor joins us from New York with more about increased security measures in the city.
Between 9/11 and the United Nations General Assembly, New York City is always on its highest alert. So the fact that this happened, that it got past security, is, of course, cause for concern. However, there are additional state policemen and National Guard deployed throughout the city and New Jersey at major transit points. Whenever you go anywhere near the United Nations, you are just surrounded by Secret Service, by National Guard and Army fatigue, in addition to your regular police presence. So you know that typically that is a very secure zone. The worry, of course, with many New Yorkers is just, well, what about these other areas? And New York, they'll tell you, is one of the most secure places as it can be in terms of having some of the best police in the world. Here in Chelsea, New Yorkers have told me that they are glad that it didn't happen during the weekday when that area is typically a lot more packed. So his reason for deciding on those targets, I'm guessing that he thought they were high population zones. Luckily, there were injuries, but nobody died during those incidents.
VOA's Ramon Taylor in New York City. It's time for us now to check out what's trending online, and we do that with International Edition's G. Abby Lee. She joins me right here in the studio with what people are saying about the Chelsea explosion and also other trending stories. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim. Like we just heard, the latest development is that we have the bomb suspect now and that he sued cops claiming he was persecuted for being a Muslim. Many Twitter and Facebook users quoted New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio, who said, "We have every reason to believe this is an act of terror." Our national security correspondent Jeff Seldon is one of them, and he's on Twitter at JSeldon. Pop singer Lady Gaga, who is a New Yorker, tweeted this: "In NY, safe and sound, saying big prayers for my friends in Chelsea. Everyone be safe. We New Yorkers always stick together." People are also talking about a Starbucks employee handing out free coffee to first responders after the explosion.
What a great gesture. It's nice to know there's a little positive story in the middle of all this chaos. What else happens to be trending online?
Well, unless you've been living under a rock, you have heard of the Pokemon Go craze. But the latest trending story is the Pokemon Go Plus, with the trending hashtag being hashtag Pokemon Go Plus.
Okay, what's that?
It's a new device that notifies you when you are near a Pokemon, so you know that you're near it without having to have the app open all the time on your phone. I know it sounds kind of complicated when you don't play the game, but basically, without having to open the app on your phone, you know that something you have to catch is nearby.
Okay.
And you can wear it like a wristwatch using a strap that comes with a device or clip it onto the edges of your clothing or bag. Some people are saying that being able to play the game while your phone is locked is great for saving battery, but others argued it could have been just a phone notification system and not something you have to shell out $35 for.
Oh, hello. That's a complimentary device to an existing game, and it costs that much?
Yes, in America it does, but in England it actually costs more, around $50 per device. That's all from me. Back to you, Jim.
Okay, maybe players there can hop a plane and come here and play it for less. Thanks for the wrap-up, G. You can follow us on Twitter at our Twitter stream, VOA_IE. Or be sure to follow the individual accounts as well. I'm at VOA Stevenson, and G is at G Abby Lee. Among the top stories that are currently trending in Asia, Cambodian leader faces backlash from unrelenting crackdown. China-Russia drills highlight converging interests and undercurrents remain. China detains woman for posting news on Wuhan crackdown. Samsung's Note 7 battery problem expands to China. A study says 100,000 deaths are caused from Indonesia's haze. Find expanded coverage from these stories and much more at the voanews.com website and on your smartphone if you happen to have one on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. World leaders are at the United Nations in New York to deal with two huge global challenges, the war in Syria and the refugee crisis it created. This will be Barack Obama's final UN General Assembly as U.S. President and the last for Ban Ki-moon as Secretary General. His decade-long tenure ends December 31st. 65 million people are refugees or displaced on the move because of conflict, natural disasters, or extreme poverty. Bonn is covering, or rather convening, a special summit about their plight, as we hear more from VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir in conversation with International Edition host Sarah Williams.
He called this summit today. President Obama's having another one tomorrow, slightly different, though. So today it was all about improving the global response to the refugee and migration crisis on a large scale. You know, we're not just talking about Syria, but we're talking about refugees and migrants from around the world. And member states agreed to protect their human rights because there's a lot of problems with people being treated well. So there was a big focus on the dignity of humans. You know, you must treat them properly. And also about countries doing more to share responsibility for caring for them and for resettling them.
Well, now this is happening is, of course, Syria, the continuing war there. And so many people have had to flee, have fled the country. I know that Syria is going to be another focus of talks there at the UN.
Oh, yes. Syria is really going to dominate this week, especially after news on Monday that the ceasefire is falling apart. On Tuesday morning, there's supposed to be a meeting of the foreign ministers of the International Support Group for Syria. So that's Secretary Kerry and some of his counterparts, Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov and others. And so Syria is really going to be front and center this week.
Well, as I said, Ban Ki-moon is coming to the end of his time as Secretary General. This is also the final General Assembly for President Barack Obama. I am assuming this must be kind of a bittersweet time for them. You know, particularly like looking at Mr. Obama, how well did he get along with the UN?
Well, I think this is really a big legacy sort of thing for both of them, actually. But for President Obama, I think he's going to really try and lay out all his accomplishments on a multilateral front. You know, when he came into office 8 years ago, the United States was not on great terms with the United Nations. During the George Bush years, they ignored the Security Council and invaded Iraq, and that was really a problem with the UN.
VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir. The week-old ceasefire in Syria appears to be in jeopardy after numerous violations, including a U.S.-led coalition airstrike Saturday that Russia claimed killed dozens of Syrian soldiers. The U.S. Central Command said the strike was targeting Islamic State fighters south of Deir al-Zor, not covered by the truce, and it was halted when it was suggested the Syrian army was under attack. Washington-based Middle East Institute scholar Zubir Iqbal tells VOA's Victor Beatty he never regarded the cessation of hostilities as a real ceasefire.
It was just a question of both sides trying to see where the weaknesses exist, because remember that ceasefire had no quote-unquote enforcement capability except some quote-unquote words that have been exchanged, and that was it. So in effect, to expect that kind of ceasefire will hold or stick was basically an expectation, a hope, a prayer, but not necessarily anything firm on the ground. It really wasn't a ceasefire. It was really more like a pause that both sides were trying to see which way to go. And that has come to a very abrupt end, unfortunately.
It would appear that at the beginning, in the first few days, it seemed to be working quite well.
There were no killings taking place at that moment. The presumption was that it was holding. The reality is that both sides were so unbelievably exhausted, number one. Number two, there was that Eid al-Adha period during which both sides were going to be to sort of break off in any case from this conflict and spend a bit of a time, if they can find it, with their families. Whatever little interlude existed is over. We are back to active hostilities. And at this time, the active hostilities do not have any goodwill behind them.
Can this truce be salvaged?
No. The reason is very simple. Three reasons. First, the objectives that all these parties are working with are irreconcilable. There's not even a pretension of them trying to reconcile these objectives. They're conflicting objectives. Number two, there is no basis to say that if you were to pursue compromise with anyone, with any party, you will be able to come out ahead and be able to reach some degree of compromise. Third issue is, how do you enforce cessation of hostilities when you have no control over the instruments of those hostilities? So basically, all three elements which are required for any peace treaty or any ceasefire to hold do not exist.
Zubir Iqbal said the lull in the fighting has allowed militia forces from Iraq and Turkey to move into Syria, while government-allied forces have moved toward the east and north, and that's likely setting up new conflict zones. The Obama administration is pressing ahead with plans to increase the number of refugees that it will allow in the United States over the next year to 110,000. That's a 30% increase over this year. The increase raises the stakes in what has become a national debate over immigration and security centering on Syrian refugees. Jeff Swikert recently met a newly arrived Syrian family here in the suburbs of Washington, D.C.
Ihsan Marwan al-Hazouri gathered his family, including his parents, and fled to Damascus when Syrian forces began making mass arrests in the city of Homs in 2012.
I was afraid that my family would get hurt, my wife, my children.
In Damascus, he was threatened by Syria's security services. His family fled to the border in a truck and then by foot into Jordan.
I was so afraid, I was not sure we were going to make it because the security forces and military personnel were all over the area. As soon as I got to Jordan, I felt safe because the government took us in as refugees.
Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump says Syrian refugees are a threat to the U.S.
We have people coming in from Syria on the migration. Thousands and thousands of people. We have no idea who they are, where they come from. There's no documentation. We have to be crazy. No, I will tell you, they're going home. If I become president, we have to.
Oh, yeah.
Orlando Wantama with Lutheran Social Services of the National Capital Area says we do know who these people are. She has helped settle thousands of refugees, including the Al-Hazouri family.
All of our clients go through rigorous security clearance, rigorous medical screenings, rigorous interviews. So it's certainly a lengthy and very comprehensive process.
Ihsan Marwan says his family underwent a two-year screening process. He was interviewed multiple times by officials from the United Nations and the International Organization for Migration. His family had no say in where they would be resettled. When it was determined they would be sent to America, a U.S. security official interviewed him about his life from childhood to the time he arrived in Jordan. The hardest part was leaving his parents behind in Amman.
I was shocked in the beginning, very shocked, because it is America. I never planned to become a refugee and come to the U.S.
Within 2 months, Ihsan Marwan found a job working in landscaping. For now, his goals are basic: to work hard enough to afford a bigger house so his parents can come and live with them, and to make sure his children get a good education, an opportunity he never had. Jeff Schweikord, VOA News, Chevy Chase, Maryland.
And there's some great video with Jeff's report. You can check it out online at our website, voanews.com. While you're there, be sure to follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE and like us on Facebook. Just go to VOA Now. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
The U.S. presidential election takes place on November 8th, 2016. VOA provides extensive coverage of this important political event. Who are the candidates, and what are the issues that will determine who the next president will be? Tune in around the clock for coverage of the U.S. presidential election, right here on VOA.
Hi there, this is Larry London, the host of Border Crossings. Nice to meet you. I would love for you to join us each and every day, Monday through Friday, on Border Crossings for requests, dedications, giveaways, and surprise guests. We've got some of today's biggest hitmakers coming into the studio to talk about their music. And all we're missing is you. So join us Monday to Friday, right here on Border Crossings. This is the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Well, this is an Olympic year. If you haven't already noticed, the 2016 Summer Olympics ended just a few weeks ago in Rio de Janeiro, and the Paralympic Games have just concluded there. Other Olympians are now competing outside of Washington, D.C. Yes, it's true. These athletes may not set any speed or strength records, but their spirit is the same as the Olympians in Rio. Do your best. VOA's Jun So takes us to the Northern Virginia Senior Olympics, as Carol Pearson narrates.
On your marks. Set.
The competitors at these games are at least 50 years old. Many have participated in the Senior Olympics for years.
Set.
77-year-old Herb Levitan has been a regular since 2005.
I like the opportunity to work with other people, other seniors. The spirit is tremendous. Everybody's very supportive.
The retired neuroscientist says he never participated in sports in his high school or college days. But at these Olympics, he competes in almost 30 events, including cycling, swimming, basketball, and jumping, and has won countless medals. However, winning is not what he aims for.
I participate because it's a motivation for me to train and to stay in shape and to be with the people that I enjoy being with.
Mandy Whalen, the torchbearer at the opening ceremony, is 76 years old. She competes in almost every track event.
Because when I was young, I was not a good runner. I was always lost in all the races.
No longer. At this year's games, she has won 8 medals in her age bracket so far. The Northern Virginia Senior Olympics started in 1982 with 75 participants. This year, there are 918, 100 more than last year.
Well, I think that there's more older people living in this area,
And I think they're more health conscious than they used to be.
Set.
The events, which take place throughout the area for 11 days, include typical Olympic sports and also some not-so-physical games.
The seniors like to, you know, keep their brains working, so some of the new sports we had this year, Sudoku, Rummy Cube, and Spelling Bee, go after those, you know, the seniors that are interested in those kind of skill activities.
Senior adults are encouraged to participate in the various events regardless of their experience. 90-year-old Marvin Bryant, who has difficulty breathing, completed the 800-meter walk carrying his oxygen backpack. This was his first time in the Senior Olympics.
I just wanted to see if I could do it. It was fun. I enjoyed it.
His fellow competitors agree.
It's fun. It's, you know, they say that showing up is 90% of life. And so if I can continue to show up, I'll be very happy.
For producer June So, I'm Carol Pearson, VOA News, Arlington, Virginia.
Well, perhaps there's a second career path for me when I retire. You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at VOA Now, and you can follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. We'd love to have you tag along. We're glad that you came along for our program. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Jim Harmon. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're all in Washington. Thanks so much for being a part of our day. Enjoy yours. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The problems facing the world today are notoriously resistant to unilateral solutions, said U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Antony Blinken in a recent address in New York. Mr. Blinken spoke days before the opening of the 71st meeting of the U.N. General Assembly. He said the national interest of the United States demands the global engagement that has been the hallmark of President Barack Obama's administration, engagement built on the foundation of a system of rules, principles, and international institutions, which the United States, as the world's rising global power after the Second World War, helped establish. It is a system not without problems, but which got the big picture right, said Deputy Secretary Blinken, averting new global cataclysms, ending the Cold War peacefully, creating the space and stability for countries to prosper. Under President Obama's engagement policy, Mr. Blinken noted, the United States, among other instances, worked at the UN Security Council to advance nuclear negotiations with Iran and to destroy Syria's declared strategic chemical weapons capacity. Mr. Blinken offered examples of collaboration in human rights with our re-engagement on the Human Rights Council, where we have shed light on some of the world's worst human rights conditions and violators, and work the U.S. has done with new leadership at the Organization of American States to strengthen that institution's role in defending democracy and promoting human rights. Mr. Blinken stated we have reinvigorated our transatlantic partnerships and strengthened relationships with Asia's key institutions and collaborative efforts in establishing a coalition of more than 67 countries to confront Daesh and undermine its vicious, phony caliphate. Working with others, Deputy Secretary Blinken said, we build a foundation of trust, greater alignment of interest, habits of cooperation, and greater legitimacy that better enables us to mobilize others against common threats and seize common opportunities. The bulk of U.S. global engagement happens at the United Nations, which, despite its flaws and its need for reform, Mr. Blinken called the gold standard of global action when mobilized effectively. Now was the time to strengthen the U.N., to adapt it to new realities, he said. The U.N. is worth fighting for, said Deputy Secretary Blinken. It ensures that our collective action better upholds our own promises, and it will help us shape and adopt an international system that actually lives up to the vision of those who first built it, a global project that remains now, as it did then, indispensable to the health, the strength, the security, the prosperity of every nation, especially the United States.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.